some people might say, oh, Google Ads is dead because of things like ChatGPT and things coming out. Those things are definitely having an impact on Google advertising, but it is far from dead. Google is still the primary place that people go to find information, to find services, products, etc. And ads are the most visible place that you find those things on Google. And so we're still seeing Google Ads work very, very well for every type of business you can imagine, with the caveat that it is not easy these days to make it work well.
Welcome to the High Voltage Business Builders Podcast, a show where we interview high voltage entrepreneurs growing and scaling through e-commerce, real estate, and other wealth without Wall Street ventures, showing you the path to making your first or next million.
Hey guys, welcome back to the High Voltage Business Builders Podcast. We have a new episode here today with John Horn. We're going to be talking about Google Ads, tracking, management, conversions, what it means in 2025 and beyond to be able to take this platform and really see it become an opportunity in your business. I've used it in the past to grow software companies and physical product companies and lead gen for consulting. And it's been a great platform. It's adapted and changed dramatically. I'm sure he'll speak to some of that today. So tell us, what's the scoop, man? What's the 411 on Google Ads today as we're recording in September here?
Yeah. So first of all, thank you so much for having me on the pod.
My pleasure.
Forward to chatting. And so Google Ads, yes, some people might say, oh, Google Ads is dead because of things like ChatGPT and things coming out. Those things are definitely having an impact on Google advertising, but it is far from dead. Google is still the primary place that people go to find information, to find services, products, etc. And ads are the most visible place that you find those things on Google. And so we're still seeing Google Ads work very, very well for every type of business that you can imagine, with the caveat that it is not easy these days to make it work well. You know, back in the day, back in the Wild West days, when it was not a mature platform yet, you could, you know, just kind of throw something out there and kind of print money, as they say. And that doesn't happen anymore. You have to be very, very smart, sophisticated in how you approach things because it is so mature. There's so much competition and Google likes extracting every dollar possible from advertisers.
That's how these platforms work, right?
Yep.
What is causing that, the barrier of entry, the change? Why is it becoming more complex?
Yeah, several factors, I'd say. So first of all, you know, it's a very mature platform that everybody knows this is where people go for information. And so everyone who wants that traffic is on Google. And so you're competing with local competitors, with national competitors, everyone who wants a bite of that pie. So it's a very competitive space. And then Google, while they like to call it an auction, while they like to say you're entering an auction with people and you just have to bid a little bit more than someone else to get the click and make sure you have the most, you know, relevant ad, et cetera. They definitely have, you know, thresholds and things where they are trying to get as much money as possible. And if you're not bidding aggressively enough, well, you're not going to show up, or they might show no ads on the page until you're bidding a certain amount. And so Google is definitely, I would say, artificially pushed costs up over time, the cost that you pay on average for a click. And those are probably the two primary market factors over time that have caused.
So they're kind of taking advantage of the new people because the flood of traffic and the ignorance is kind of just their opportunity, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Not to take money. We've experienced that on the Amazon ad side with the amount of money they can take from beginners who are not really unaware of how they're sucking down dollars and becoming advertising behemoths because of it, right? In your experience, where are you seeing the best businesses deploying this? Like, what kind of products or niches or services are you seeing within your sphere that are doing the best?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of them. It's probably easier to say some of the ones that are harder to be successful.
Okay.
Where it can be harder to be successful is just where you have very low average order value if you're in the commerce space, or just very, you know, low value coming from a click, because you're no longer going to get clicks for 10 cents, 20 cents. So if you're selling a $5 widget, it's going to be incredibly hard to get Google Ads to work profitably for you, unless you have some way of then getting a lifetime value from that customer and selling them other things over time. So you need to have enough kind of margin, a high enough price point for your product or your service to make it successful. Again, like in the service space, you know, if you're a plumber and you charge, you know, $50 for a visit, I don't know if there are any plumbers who still do that anymore, but let's just say you do, you know, it's going to be almost impossible to get profitable leads from Google Ads because of how much it costs for those clicks to get to you. So you have to have enough margin built in to really be competitive. One thing I would say is working really well from an approach standpoint is being really smart about how you feed conversion data back to Google and then use that in your campaigns. So in other words, you need to tell Google, okay, these are where the leads are coming from, the orders, whatever it is, and ideally work your way down the pipeline. So not just here's all the form
deep funnel conversion exactly. tracking in order
this
to really help to
sales optimize. Qualify. This is what became a customer, and then bidding and optimizing towards those things can have a really dramatic impact on how efficient your campaigns are.
Yeah. How much smarter has it gotten with the AI, the tool sets? I know they just launched Gemini 2.5 Flash. I mean, they're doing significantly fast advancements in the AI space. Is that keeping pace with the ad side too?
I would say yes and no. You know, if I compare like where we are to 5 years ago, way smarter, much more intelligent matching of things. At the same time, though, there's a little bit of an over-reliance right now on AI where, you know, for example, you look at your search terms report. So those are the actual words that people typed in to match to your keywords that you're targeting. And you'll still see just patently bad matches where it's like, okay, the AI got that very, very wrong. And you see the same thing, you know, Google loves recommending headlines, descriptions, things for your ads.
Things that make them more money.
Sometimes they're great. Sometimes it's like, that's not my service at all. And sometimes
they just want you to click it because it's definitely going to make them more bank.
Exactly. Yep. And sometimes they would even violate Google's own policies. Like the AI will recommend something that we know if we run that, you're going to flag our account because we can't say that in an ad. So yeah.
I got one the other day. I was impersonating a public figure and I'm like, who am I impersonating?
That's a big thing right now. We've had a lot of people reach out for
help. Is it a new? Okay, yeah, because it just happened to me like 2 days ago. I'm like, what are you talking about? They like, we paused the whole ad account because they said I was impersonating a public figure. It sounds like a glitch.
Yeah,
maybe.
It's something that they are enforcing a lot relatively recently. And they did break out, like it falls under, I think it's the circumventing, or I can't remember if it's circumventing or unacceptable business practices. It falls under a larger policy that's been around for a long time. But they did more recently kind of break it out into this subcategory. And we've seen a lot of enforcement recently.
Yeah.
Some of it corresponds with, you know, so many people out there like making, you know, fake YouTube videos and AI generated content that looks like a person.
I see.
That I think that's gotten it more on their radar.
Hey, these are just videos of me. So that wasn't really, you know, unless they consider me impersonating myself, which I don't highly recommend.
They might. I've seen Google make some weird assumptions.
It's a weird decision. So on the topic of the AOV side, the average order value for those maybe in the e-commerce world listening, because we have a number of people from different topics we can cover here. But what would you recommend they don't tackle a price point at that doesn't make sense to even start testing if they don't get their, you know, retail price point up so they can attach a better AOV to it?
Yeah, so I would say, you know, the big exception, of course, is if you have a lot of lifetime value. So if you're like, hey, I'm going to sell, you know, a stick of deodorant for $5 now, but they're going to be a customer for the next 10 years, so that's a different thing. But if we're talking about, you know, just AOV where there's not tons of lifetime value, as a rule of thumb, I would say if your AOV is lower than $50, you're probably going to have a pretty hard time getting Google to work successfully. There will be exceptions and outliers to that for sure, but that would probably be my rule of thumb right now.
It's our rule of thumb on the DTC side as well as on the Amazon side. It just really doesn't seem to dial in. And even then you're looking at trying to get them to $150 to $250 in the at least within the first 90 days, or you simply don't get the cost justification. The ROI doesn't kick in. And a lot of people focus on ROAS, but they don't really understand what that means. Can you break that down for the folks listening?
Yeah, absolutely. So ROAS, return on ad spend, that's looking at, okay, I spent a dollar in advertising. How many dollars of revenue came from that? But there are, like you said, a lot of pitfalls to that. A, it doesn't take into account things like that lifetime value. So if you're only focused on ROAS, then you're only looking at that first order. And you might be like, oh, I can't run ads because, you know, I can't be profitable in my first order. But then you're missing out if that person's going to come back and place 5 or 6 orders. So that's a downside. Other downsides are trusting that number too much, because the customer journey these days is massive. You know, not everyone sees an ad, clicks on it, buys right away. There are so many different things. They might go out and check something out on Reddit and then see an ad and then find you organically and then see your YouTube video. Like there's so many things that play into it. And there's so many places along that journey where that tracking can fall off and where that ad may have influenced a purchase, but you don't know because it wasn't tracked back. And so in addition to looking at return on ad spend, we also look at things like media efficiency ratio, looking at the overall revenue you're generating related to how much you're spending in marketing and seeing how is that changing over time. Are you getting more efficient, less efficient? Is revenue going up? And making kind of bigger picture budget allocation decisions based upon that.
Yeah. Those businesses you see are doing better. Are they staying within a 12 or 24-month customer lifetime value? Which one are you seeing that are kind of more strategically having success because they're maybe willing to spend more, they're willing to look at it from a larger window of opportunity? What are you saying?
Yeah, I'd say it's hard to give a blanket answer to that just because we have so many different types of customers seeing such different results. I would definitely say when we're making decisions around, you know, budget allocation based on things like lifetime value, MRR, things like that, we're generally not looking much out beyond 12 months and what revenue they might generate during that time, because there's just, you know, A, cash flow is a thing, and then B, there's so many things that can change down the road.
Yeah, those are great questions. And it is kind of a broad stroke, how long is a piece of string question, but I was curious to see where you would take the answer. I mean, you work with a variety, I assume, of client types. What is your kind of scope and what's your favorite niche?
Yeah, broad variety, e-com, lead gen, local, national. The favorite one to work with, I mean, e-commerce is fun because you see the immediate results. You're like, hey, dollar in the door, orders, you know, et cetera. So that's fun.
Yeah,
but it's also really fun when you have, you know, a B2B customer and you're like, hey, this one lead is going to make you, you know, $100,000 of revenue over the next year. Like that's a real fun win. So fun, different categories, different
strokes. How did you get started, Jerry? Were you a media buyer yourself? Did you, you know, build the company to expand what you do, or, you know, what's your storyline, I guess?
Yeah, the quick story on that. So I've been doing this for 12 or 13 years at this point. And so my first entry into Google Ads, kind of this world, was with StubGroup. The company was started by my brother and long-term friend of his, and they brought me on as employee number one back in the day. And we bootstrapped it and grew it from there. And then, so I've, media buyer, talking to clients, doing every job under the sun of the company, and then took over the CEO role about 6 or so years ago.
Okay. So you're the chief revenue officer, now you're the CEO of the company. How many people, and you're in, where were you saying? You're in Texas, right? Yeah,
I'm in Texas. We're fully remote as a company. So we've got people all over. We've got around 30 or so team members right now.
Excellent. What are you seeing in 2025 that somebody should be aware of? You can open your crystal ball and say, well, fourth quarter into next year, I predict. Not going to hold you accountable, but I'm just curious if you shake the black ball, what do you think you're going to see?
It's not an original answer, but you have to say AI. Specifically, what I mean by AI is how it's affecting consumer behavior. So people going to ChatGPT, Copilot, Grok, Gemini, et cetera, to do their searches. I mean, I was talking with my wife yesterday. She's like, oh man, I'm using Copilot all the time because it's easier to do that than to search on Google. Mm. And I'm like, well, that's many billion dollar statement right there. So we're absolutely seeing that for our clients as well. We're starting to see clients getting business, getting leads, getting orders from ChatGPT, from Gemini, and that's only going to increase over time.
Ready to escape your grind? We help entrepreneurs build real wealth with private label brands. Visit voltagedn.com to start now.
Yeah. Can you affect that in some way, shape, or form with your Google Ads?
With ads, not currently. I do believe that ads are going to come to those platforms. I think ChatGPT is going to have to bring ads. Google is already incorporating ads into their AI mode, which is, you know, the tab you can click into when you're doing normal searches on Google. But in terms of influencing, like Grok and whatnot, ChatGPT, et cetera, not on the advertising side. There are things on the organic side you can do to try and get your information sourced. We're doing a lot of work in that space right now with clients to help them figure that out.
Okay. So yeah, AI is kind of a broad stroke. Again, we're back to the how long is a piece of string, because it's going to be variable by niche, category, product, service. And a lot of other variables, you know, I assume you're still seeing a good amount of traffic across Google, a good amount of opportunity, but there is shifting things to be aware of, if I'm hearing you correctly.
Absolutely. Yeah. So traffic's not down on Google. Traffic continues to grow, and it's still by far the 800-pound gorilla. It's still the primary place people go for information services. But it also has a bigger threat right now from these other tools than Google has faced in really a couple of decades. And one of the things that's going to be really interesting to see is from a user behavior perspective, like, I think the pie is going to get bigger. People are already using ChatGPT, Gemini, et cetera, to do to search for things, to have conversations they never did have with Google.
Yeah,
so the amount of that pie is growing. But the question is, okay, how many of them are never going to actually get to Google as part of that journey? And therefore, Google's not going to have a chance to throw an ad at them and make money off them.
Yeah. No, it makes sense. It's an ever-shifting environment, and it almost feels to some degree like the organic side of this thing is a bit up in the air at the moment as to how you impact that. And I've always personally loved paid traffic. It's just difficult to dial in, and it takes a bit of threshold and pain for people to get past that stage of optimization. You know, starting a campaign is one thing and optimizing it is completely different. Maybe walk us through some of the best tips in what campaign types and objectives they should use if they're going to start out.
Yeah, absolutely. So first of all, you need to define what success is. We see a lot of advertisers, they'll just run campaigns and they have no tracking set up. They don't really know what they're looking for. And so they're setting themselves up for failure, because if it does work well, they don't know how to replicate that because they don't know where that good performance came from. And if it doesn't work well, they don't know how to make it better because they don't know what's not working well. So getting conversion tracking set up when you start saying, okay, what's my offer? What am I driving? Is it a lead form? Great. If so, do I have a good landing page? It's actually communicating that, making it easy for people to get there. Or, am I sending traffic to my homepage and they have to navigate all around the website to find the information? Things, just basic things like that, people still very often forget to do. And then I would say, when it comes to campaign types, Google is making a big push towards automation, automated campaign types. So Performance Max would be a great example. It's this campaign type. It's kind of a give a bunch of stuff to Google, and then Google goes and makes all the decisions.
Yeah. I haven't had a lot of success with that one myself.
In the lead gen space, it's very hard to make successful. In e-commerce, we see it work well for a lot, but in lead gen, the most common thing that happens is we get a bunch of spam leads coming through, like spam filling out forms.
Yep.
And then that reinforces Google's learning. They're like, oh, it's a great cost per conversion. Let's get you more of that.
Oh,
and
the spam,
you wake up and it's like, well, yeah, it says I got a great cost per conversion, but it's literally robots and spam. And I just wasted a bunch of money. That happened.
That's a mess. Yeah. I've seen that happen before, but on the e-com side, I don't see it as much.
On the e-com side, the reason I think e-com is different is because what is tracking as results, if you have it set up correctly, is actual orders. People don't do spam orders, generally speaking. They're not giving their credit card out and letting you charge it. And so because it has a much better quality of data coming back in, it's more likely to work.
And you're tracking on a cost.
Take that learning and make it work better for lead gen by doing things like optimizing, like we talked about, towards sales qualified leads, things down the pipeline. So there are some more advanced strategies that can work well there.
How much would you recommend somebody's going to be willing to start at per day, per budget? And let's say on the e-commerce side to start, what would you recommend they don't do, or what would you recommend they make sure they understand they should spend in order to see some kind of results to optimize?
As a rule of thumb for most companies, I wouldn't start Google Ads unless you can spend at least $2,000 per month as your budget. And you're willing to do that for several months to collect data to figure out what's working, what's not working. There are exceptions to every rule, of course, but that's kind of my rule of thumb.
Yeah, that's pretty good. That's lower than what I would have anticipated. It's just probably based on speed. I would have thought more like $3,000 to $5,000 a month to just kind of figure out. Well, and it's how fast do you want to cut that data down into how quickly you want to make decisions would be how much you're willing to spend to find out, right?
Exactly. Yep. And it depends too on what your market is. If someone's in a local market where there's relatively little traffic, that's a very different thing than if you're a national e-commerce brand trying to go after a very competitive space, then 2K is nothing there. So it's definitely depends on market and competition level.
This is good. Anything I didn't ask you?
I think those questions were great. The one other thing I'll just bring up, we kind of touched on it with the public figure impersonation, but Google is very trigger happy about suspending accounts and preventing you from advertising. And this happens for a billion different reasons. And when it happens, it can be a nightmare to fix. And we spend a lot of time working in this space, a lot of clients who hire us specifically for help with this. So I would just say for everyone getting into Google Ads, really carefully read through Google's policies. Try to educate yourself as much as you can about what they don't want you to do. And don't take shortcuts. Like when you're setting up your account, you're entering your information, your payment information, you're setting up Google Merchant Center, whatever it is, really be thorough and get it right. Because Google does not apply common sense once they suspend you. And it can take months, literally, if ever.
It's a painful process. We deal with that on the Amazon side, too. So that can take quite a long time to get through their customer support and validation. Anything else that happens, whether we did it or it was done to us, is a frustrating process. Where can somebody get help from you on one of those issues, whether they're looking to get started or they need to fix an account that was shut down?
Yeah, we have a ton of content on our website, subgroup.com. We have like a whole policy center with a bunch of free guides. And then from there as well, if you want to bring the experts in, you can hire us to come in and fix the problem for you.
Cool. And what does it mean you're a Google partner? What does that mean?
Yeah, so Google has this partner program, and a step above that, they call their Premier Partner Program, which is where we're at currently. It basically means we hit a bunch of thresholds in terms of how much spend we manage, the quality of the work that we do, our retention rate of customers, our adoption rate of Google's different platforms. It's kind of a stamp of approval from Google saying, hey, these guys, you can trust them to manage your ads because we see what they're doing and it looks good.
Okay, awesome. Man, I appreciate it. You got a wealth of knowledge in you. Clearly, you know your stuff. There's a conscientious awareness of what you're doing. You've obviously had a lot of experience in your growth. Maybe you got a case study or something you want to share with us real quick? Something you're proud of? Something that brags on your company a little bit?
Yeah, let's see. Case study. Let me pull up so that I don't miss any numbers here.
Yeah, of course. Caveats and asterisks, enclosed disclaimers, all that stuff.
Exactly.
All results are not typical.
Exactly. So one of the more recent ones we put up. So we had a SaaS company. They're in the kind of the entertainment space.
Okay.
And they came to us, they've been running Google Ads for a while, but they, you know, weren't super happy with where things are at. And so we took a look at things and we were able, ultimately we increased their subscriptions by 349%. We did that by making just the quality of the traffic more relevant, you know, cutting out a lot of irrelevant traffic and then really working on the cost per click as well. I think we got that down by about 51%. They were just paying a lot per click and there's only so much you can do no matter what your conversion rate is to make that successful. So 349% more conversions, 51% lower cost per click, 42% lower decrease in cost per subscription acquisition.
Very nice. Very nice. If someone wants to work with you and get results to that degree,
yeah,
what would they, you know, expect? A contract 3 months, month to month, you know, based on percentage of revenue or based on percentage of spend? How do you work your business?
Yeah, it's pretty straightforward. We charge a monthly retainer plus percentage of ad spend that we're managing. Our contracts are usually either 3 months and then month to month after that, or month to month from the beginning, just depending on, you know, kind of what setup fee you want to pay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, no long-term contracts. We try to let our work speak for itself.
Okay, very good. Well, dude, thanks for sharing some information today. Hopefully guys got some good information out of this. Google AdWords is definitely an opportunity. Not going anywhere. It is a more complex beast than it has been in the past. So you're going to want to get some guidance, some information, and some training. Sounds like there's some free stuff on the subgroup.com. You can go check that out. Obviously, connect with John if you have any additional questions or need support with account closures or impersonating people, even if it's not you. Those can be challenging, so I got to go play with that myself. But I encourage everybody to give it a shot if you're in the e-commerce world. Once you dial this in, my experience, and you can, you know, tell me yours, is that once it works really well. It takes a little bit to figure it out, but once you get it figured out, it can really grow and scale pretty quick. Would you agree or disagree with that?
Absolutely agree.
Yeah, fantastic. Well, man, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast.
Thanks so much for having me.
Guys, like, share, comment, and engage. Check out the previous podcast. Subscribe so you can catch the next one. Always learning great tips and everything here. And as we always say at the end, your opportunity begins at the end of your excuses. So get out there and do something imperfect, and something perfect will happen along the way. I'll see you guys on the next episode.
Ask you this. If you're serious about building an e-commerce business starting on Amazon FBA, what if myself and my team worked with you one-on-one to execute the steps outlined in the podcast while helping you discover what the heck to sell, how to make sure it's profitable, and how to successfully launch a brand, plus how to do it under a consulting plus performance-driven model where I put a $10,000 skin in the game guarantee for those that show up and are serious about building a real business done with us. If yes, text keyword profit to +1 417 413 4209. That's 1 417 413 4209. And I will personally respond with a few simple questions. If you're not in the US or Canada, please visit voltagedm.com. That's voltagedm.com. Click get started and book a no pressure discovery call with me or a member of my team to learn more about the Business Builders one-on-one coaching and mentoring for CEOs, entrepreneurs, and those looking to build an empire or retire using the power of e-commerce. Once again, thank you for listening, and be sure to tune in next week for a brand new episode of the High Voltage Business Builders Podcast.